Hey there, web or podcast listeners. I'm Vermont Edition producer Matthew Smith, and I wanted to let you know that this podcast has been edited to make it a little bit shorter and a little bit sweeter. Thanks, and I hope you enjoy.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. The Scott administration and Democratic leaders at the State House are having a very difficult time reaching agreement on a school funding bill for next year, as well as the state budget. Governor Phil Scott wants to use $60 million in one-time money to avoid having an increase in the statewide property tax rate this year, and he wants to put together a long-range plan that he says will save millions of dollars. But the Democrats argue this is a poor use of the one-time money and that the governor's plan is a wish list and not a concrete proposal. The governor has drawn a clear line on this issue.
I will not accept a statewide property tax rate increase because Vermonters can't afford it. It's essential we move forward together to prevent this property tax rate increase this year.
Because it's unlikely that this issue will be resolved during the current session, it's likely there will be a special session in several weeks to deal with these concerns. What are the chances that this dispute will remain unresolved even after the special session? And then what happens? These are some of the questions today we have for Governor Phil Scott. Governor, welcome back to the program.
Well, thanks for having me on, Bob.
So let's see if we can capsulize what this situation. You've got a plan to use roughly $60 million in one-time money to avoid a property tax increase this year. You have a five-year plan that you say will accrue savings to pay this money back and provide a stabilized tax rate for the next 5 years. And part of that plan is increasing student staff ratio on a town by town basis. I think you have a task force that wants to look at it as opposed to having a state mandate. You're also looking at a statewide health care contract for teachers, lowering what are known as the excess spending thresholds to penalize higher spending towns, and also making changes to special education programs. So here's what the Democrats are saying. Interesting five-year plan, but none of it is mandated because you don't want to mandate those changes. And so in that case, who knows if the savings are really going to be there?
Yeah, almost like any provision, anything we do in the State House, any proposals that are brought forward, there's no guarantee as to what the outcome will be. But I believe that the plan we're putting forward will be a substantial. I believe it will have an effect on property tax rate increases for the next 5 years. It will keep them stable. But let's go back a little bit. Why are we in the position we're in? I mean, I think we have to keep asking ourselves, every single year, the education revenues grow and taxes, more taxes are imposed and burdens are imposed on Vermonters because of our demographics. We're aging as a society. We have fewer and fewer kids we're educating. We're educating 30,000 fewer kids than we were 20 to 25 years ago. That's the problem. Yet we're spending more. This is the single biggest expenditure in state government. We're spending depending on how you calculate it, $1.7 to $1.8 billion. And our total all in with, I mean, these are state dollars as well. These aren't federal dollars. This is state dollars primarily. So when you look at our overall budget of less than $6 billion, it's a third. You know, and that's concerning. So what we need to do is to accept the fact that because we're losing we're educating three fewer kids every single day, and our staff to student ratios are out of balance. They're the highest in the nation in some respects, depending on how you calculate, how you look at that. We need to do something about this. This is not sustainable. We can't afford this. And what we're doing is we're preventing investments in our kids as a result. So we're trying to prop up this system that's not working very well, and it's preventing us from investing in the kids that we want to help. If we had extra money, if we were willing to have the courage to think outside the box and do something about this, we could have costs. We could use those savings to reinvest in our kids, early childhood care and learning, more tech ed, and more higher education, because the reality is most of the money that we spend is in K through 12. And we could save this if we use this $58 million in one-time money as a loan to ensure that property taxes don't rise this year and over the next 5 years, and also utilize those six policy proposals that we talked about, that you brought up. We could generate $474 million. Our analysis says $474 million over 5 years.
Well, let's look at one of those provisions and see how this plays out. You've looked at the idea of mandating student-staff ratios, and you've come to the conclusion that you don't want to have a one-size-fits-all for the state, and it really needs to be done on a town-by-town, school-by-school basis. Your program, about 60% of your savings are in that one program, that student-staff ratio. So what happens if you go out to communities and they say, you know what, because of all the different programs that schools are offering these days, we can't cut our staff. Then 60% of your savings disappear.
Well, again, if you could save, we're projecting that if you were able to develop this and implement this, that we could have $300 million worth of savings, plus pay back the one-time, so-called one-time money that has dropped from the sky over the last month or so, that is taxpayer money, by the way, and we need to put it back in the hands of taxpayers. But if we were able to borrow that money and put that into place to keep property taxes level for the next 5 years, I've seen the JFO, Joint Fiscal Office, have pushed back and said, oh, we don't believe it's 300. We think it's 100. And I would dispute that. But let's just say it is 100 million. Not worst case scenario, it's 100 million. Property taxes level for the next 5 years. 100 million is pretty good. And using that money to reinvest in our kids. I mean, if that's the worst case scenario here, Is that not a good thing? Is that not something that we should move forward on? So I would push back if you will accept the fact that if it's between 100 and 300, it's still all positive. We're paying back the money, and we're readjusting and investing in an education system that could be. It could be a magnet for the nation. It could be a tool for us to use in terms of bringing back, changing the demographics in Vermont, having the best education system possible in the nation is a pretty good economic tool.
So you've said that you will not support any increase in the statewide property tax rate this year because Vermonters can't afford it. And yet on town meeting day, the vast majority of school budgets passed. And I think there's an overall increase of about 1.75%. There was really a lot of budget restraint on town meeting day. But folks went to the polls and they said, you know what, we do support slightly higher budgets for our schools. So aren't they indicating that some tax increase is reasonable?
There's no correlation between, first of all, I don't know. I think the percentage of those who turned out for town meeting day was about 21%. So I wouldn't say that's the vast majority of Vermonters, and that's unfortunate that more people don't show up to take charge and to try and do whatever they can to keep their rates lower. But 21% showed up. I think it's impossible for voters to know the impact of their school budget vote on their state property tax rate. We put out a memo, as we're obligated to do statutorily, that said if we do nothing, if we do absolutely nothing, we're going to see a 9-cent increase in the property tax rate in the education tax this next year. And I find that unacceptable. I said that we don't need to accept this. We should manage the education fund just like we do any other, the transportation fund, the general fund, and others. We shouldn't let it manage us. But be that it may, this may be a philosophical difference between myself and the legislature. But because there's this not this exact correlation between how much your budget grows or shrinks by your property tax rate, some people could see, as in Berlin, the per pupil spending, where I live, the per pupil spending actually was reduced. Does that mean that that I should have a that there should be a lowering of my tax rate this year?
But when people go to the polls to vote on town meeting day, and let's say their local budget is going to go up 4 or 5%, they might not know exactly how.
Do they think it's going to go up 6, 7, 8, 9, 10%?
They might not know exactly how the statewide property tax rate is going to work, because that's pretty complicated. But don't you think they know, I'm voting for a higher school budget, therefore I'm going to have higher taxes?
I don't agree with that, because it's so complicated. I had my tax commissioner put together all the steps in its simplest form. I'm going to leave this with you. That could take up the next 20 to 30 days if you wanted to go through this. But I asked him to put together in the simplest possible terms the 24 steps, which would help determine what your state property tax rate would be. And I just don't – it's complicated. I just don't think you can. There is no correlation between the two. What happens with since Act 60 is that the districts all vote on their budgets, and then they turn in an invoice to the state, and the state just turns around and pays it. It just puts into a big pot. And that's how they, you know, then you take the grand list of what your property values are now. And if they're going up, as they will, possibly it could go down. Even if you voted for an increase in your town, your property tax rate could go down because the grand list goes up. So it's complicated. And I don't think there's any correlation at all between the two.
Let's start with Barb, who's calling from St. Johnsbury. Hi, Barb. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. And first, before I make my question, I wanted to thank Governor Scott for his vote on the gun bill. I mean, for his passage of the gun bill. So I wanted to ask Governor Scott, if you believe that you can make this deal and all these good things will happen from it, why didn't it happen this year? Yes, that's my question. Why didn't you work on it this year instead of saying, this year we're going to vote, we're going to put one-time money in, which we're going to have to pay back, but we don't know that it'll work because you didn't work on it this year.
Well, we have been working on it. I mean, we gave the legislature. I mean, let's go back down memory lane here again. For the last 2 years, I've been saying, and before that, I campaigned on the premise that that I didn't believe that we needed to raise taxes and fees. That should be the last option, and that there you know we should manage ourselves and find efficiencies and do whatever we can, and be that the last option. I believe there's another path forward here. There is a tremendous savings when you look at the especially in the student to staff ratios, and what they are. 80% of our $1.7 billion is in labor. So I've been in business. You've been in business, Bob. I mean, there's many people out there in business. 80%. Is where the money is. So you're going to have to do something different. So as you have fewer students in the system, 30,000 fewer than 20 to 25 years ago, you have to make decisions that are difficult. I wish we weren't in this situation. I wish our demographics were different. I wish that Vermont was more affordable, that we're growing the economy, which we're addressing each and every day to reverse these trends. But we have to accept the fact that we're on an unsustainable path. So we put together, I spoke about this in my State of the State, my budget address. We sent the legislative committees on education 18 ideas that we thought would work. Last year, if you remember, we proposed a statewide health care contract, and it was resisted. That was what the whole problem was right to the very end, and they wouldn't do it. This year, it seems as though it's a good idea. So they've reversed their position on this, which is great, because that can save us a tremendous amount of money over the next few years. But to say that we haven't been at the table, I can come up with, Bob, you can do it. You can look at all the agendas in all the legislative committees, and you can see pretty quickly that we've been at the table. We've been there in the committees each and every day and trying to work on something that will work for everyone. Now, this money that came out in the last minute, the 44 $1 million of increased revenue is taxpayer money. And what better way to give it back to taxpayers than by reducing the spending? I for the life of me, I can't understand this. We are spending my budget that I propose through organic growth because of economic growth and so forth, more activity. We're spending $80 million more than last year without raising any taxes or fees. We didn't raise taxes or fees last year, but we were able to this year. There's $80 million more in my budget. Now, with $44 million more in revenue that dropped from the sky last month, that's going to increase another to $120 million. Also, with the one-time money that came from the tobacco settlement, there's another $34. So round it down, $150 million more that we're receiving more than last year is plenty of opportunity for us to do something and to reprioritize and do what and live within our means. It doesn't mean that we're going to take all that money. Another $150 million has come to us, and now the legislature would like to spend $58 million more, tax you $58 million more. And I just find that that's not sustainable either. That's not what I was elected to do, and that's not what I've said I was going to do. I said we were going to resist, especially when we have money to do everything that they want to do without raising taxes.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Our guest today, Governor Phil Scott. We're looking at the big education funding dispute at the State House. Let's turn to Carol in South Royalton. Hi, Carol. Welcome to the program.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Sure. What's on your mind today?
I am a recently retired 35-year mathematics instructor, high school math teacher. And my basic concern about the governor's plan is the simplistic view of teacher-to-student ratios. I understand he's a businessman, and I understand the student-to-teacher ratio thing, and I understand an average quite well. And I think that that's a really poor way of trying to look at education, because unlike business, students are not widgets. Because you have a four-person AP calculus class does not mean that you can take 20 kids from someplace else and bring the average up. You can't. You can't just put kids there. Because you have 15 kindergarten kids, you can't just take some third graders and put them in there to boost class size. And when you add that to the push for alternate pathways and for personalized instruction, where kids are doing, especially juniors and seniors, 1,000 different things that teachers are supervising but not teaching, you end up a heavy loading because you have to, the required courses like Algebra 1, Geometry, History, U.S. History, that's where you have to just put, and I've taught classes when we've tried this before, of 34 in Geometry in a sophomore class, which is the worst place to have those overloaded classrooms.
Okay.
But if you're looking at education as a widget thing, that's what happens. The only way you can bring those ratios down, unless you cancel all those alternative classes, is to power load the required classes. And that's my comment, and I'll listen.
Okay, Carol, we appreciate your phone call very much. We've gotten, in addition to Carol's call, we've gotten a number of emails that talk about how schools these days are providing a lot of social services. And I bet if we look back on the growth of school staff over the last 20 years, we would see a lot of social service programs being responsible for the growth, as opposed to, you know, more fourth grade teachers or math teachers. And what about that? Schools are being asked to do more, and that's probably responsible for a big growth in their budget.
Well, I would ask, are we unique? Are we different than every other state in the nation? We have the our 4.25-to-1 ratio is the lowest or the highest in the nation. Again, I get those two mixed up because it depends on how you look at it. But 4.25 is substantially lower. If we went and changed it to 5.25-to-1. We'd save $100 million, and we'd still be the lowest in the nation. So New Hampshire does it with 6.25 to 1. We used to be at 6 to 1. And I understand, but here's the part we're missing. And again, if we're just throwing money at this, and not having the courage to think outside the box and fix the system, so to speak, to give a better education to our kids, a lot of those kids that don't have the opportunities that other schools do. They don't have band. They don't have theater. They don't have some of the AP courses and so forth. They don't have those opportunities because the costs are so high. So we're going to have to address this. It's unsustainable and it's unresponsible for us to just let it go because we aren't doing the students any favors.
Let's turn to Jack, who's calling from Shelburne. Hi, Jack. Welcome to the program.
Thanks very much. And I just want to say I'm a former school board member and a public school administrator, and I absolutely support the governor's position. And the question I have for the governor is really two parts. You know, why do you think the Democratic Progressive Coalition in the legislature brings nothing forward each session to address property tax relief and educational spending, despite these irrefutable demographics and national education operational standards which support your position, Governor? And instead they sit and wait and take shots at you at the end for your proposals. And then the second part is, do you believe local boards will ever reduce staff to the levels that other states operate at, just as effectively as Vermont does with so many more staff? I appreciate your thoughts.
Well, in terms of why the legislature doesn't react, I would venture to guess that they hear their share of complaints from their constituents about rising costs and the affordability of Vermont and the demographics and so forth. I have to believe they're hearing that. But for whatever reason, they philosophically don't agree. They view the education fund as self-leveling, as I explained before, very simplistically, what happens is all the districts across the state and all the schools, they vote for their budgets, and that sets what they need for spending, what they need for revenue, and then they just send a bill to the state for that. It's all put into one pot altogether, and then you take the grand list and do the math, and that sets the rate, and so you just spend more money. And so nobody is managing the education fund. That's the problem. And this is in stark contrast to what's been done over the last number of years. I believe that we need to control the education fund, that we can address this, and we can utilize the savings that would be produced to give the kids a better education. And again, early childhood care and learning is so essential, and it would lead to other savings throughout societal savings throughout their lives. And I just feel as though we're spending enough money. We're spending $1.7 to $1.8 billion, the single largest expenditure in state government, and we could be doing it more efficiently and more effectively and giving kids a better education. In terms of the staff-to-student ratios, I believe we can, and we need to. But we all have to address this together in order to accomplish this. And for those who say, you know, it's too late to act on it, I hear this every year. You know, we can't do this. It's too late. But, you know, since December, I made it clear I'm not going to support a property tax rate increase. I held a summit that was open to legislators. Some attended. I laid out what we need to achieve this goal in my State of the State address. And we gave them 18 ideas to contemplate in the legislative committees. I sent a letter to them in March addressing these concerns about bills that I have here that aren't being addressed. And I believe that we need to We need to work at this together. It wasn't a veto threat. It was just saying, we're not going to raise tax and fees. We have enough money in the system to accomplish what we need to accomplish. We agree on a lot of the policies, but let's be realistic about what we have and work together so that we can have a quality session and have results in the end.
So let's just look down the road at how this all could play out. There's going to be a special session. I think there's probably very little doubt about that. You would be calling a special session sometime in the next couple of weeks to try to find a resolution to this dispute. Let's just say there is no resolution in the special session. Now, the education financing bill is tied up with the state budget. The new state budget goes into effect July 1st. Could we be looking at a shutdown of state government over this issue?
Look, I believe there's an answer here, and we will address it. We have to be adults. We were elected to deal with this, and we'll deal with it. And I believe that we're not as far off as the tensions might suggest. There's a lot of agreement on the goals, but let's achieve the goals without increasing the tax burden on already overburdened Vermonters. We did it last year, and we're spending more money this year, so we can do it again. My education plan is about improving the efficiency so we can invest more in our kids while ensuring the system is affordable. The current system just doesn't achieve either of those. So we have to do things differently. And I believe there are many proposals that aren't being addressed as well that I have an interest in. You know, I want to make sure the $30 million that I identified as a result of the federal tax package that counterintuitively needs to be returned to taxpayers. That needs to be done. The Social Security benefits, the removal of the tax on Social Security benefits, we should do that. We should remove the tax on military pensions. The National Guard scholarships that I put forward. These are all initiatives that I had in my initial budget that didn't raise taxes and fees. So we showed a path forward to doing that. There's no reason. And now we've received additional money since then.
But if it comes down to accepting an increase in the statewide property tax rate or not, and you've made it very clear you're not going to accept it, are you willing to shut state government down over this issue?
We have a couple months to go before that. I'm confident that they will see the light and see that we can do this. Again, we're receiving $150 million more than we did last year. $150 million more. We can make this happen. We can put this program together, this education plan, save money over the next 5 years, stabilize tax rates, and everybody wins. And I just for the life of me, don't understand why we have to raise taxes when we're bringing in more money. Most Vermonters understand that fact, that they're paying enough already. We don't need to tax them more. We're receiving more money. This is counterintuitive to me.
So if the Democratic leaders were here right now, I think that they would accept a compromise that included a small increase in the statewide property tax rate and maybe the use of about $40 million of this one-time money. But as far as you're concerned, this is not a negotiable item.
Yeah, I've campaigned on this. I said it all last year. We proved we could do it. I said it this year. I said it on this program, I believe, in December when the letter came out about the 9 cent. I said it wasn't acceptable and that we could do better. I said it in my State of the State address, the budget address. I've written them letters. I've talked with them about it. This is no surprise. This is maybe a political game to make me look bad in the next upcoming election. But, you know, I didn't get elected to not address these fundamental structural problems that we have in this state. I was elected to make sure that I was the backstop for this spending spree that's been happening for last decade. We need to address this, and we can. We just need to make sure we're spending more money. And again, we can do this effectively and efficiently.
We're almost out of time, but you sound reasonably confident that there is going to be a compromise here during the special session.
Well, again, Vermonters expect it. We have a responsibility to do so. We are elected to make sure that we move forward. And I don't think what I'm asking for is unreasonable. We'll negotiate on the policy aspects. I'm not going to get probably all of the initiatives that I put forward, and they won't get all of theirs. They're not going to get to raise taxes. I think that's the bottom line. I'm not going to allow that to happen.
Governor Phil Scott will be following this issue very closely in the days and weeks ahead. Many thanks for taking the time to be with us today.
Thanks very much for having me on.